welcome to the Design Intent Podcast. Today we're covering the second half of the list of priorities in design and the laws of design.
The second half of our first talk that we had
last week. Last week, that's correct. So we covered the first two items, which were being dependable and depending on your team. The second, which was maintaining simplicity. Today we're going to talk about priorities of design and establishing those things and being a leader.
Right.
So on the third law. Why don't you explain that to us?
Well, for me, kind of thinking about it, like we always have to prioritize what we're going to do first, right? And so you want to, make the list. It's kind of like a list of tasks. But in my mind, I'm thinking, what are the priorities? And it's either the priorities of actions of things you have to do as a teammate, or it's the priority of what's the design trying to solve? What's the problem? What are you trying to solve? So it's really coming at it from two things. The first thing is really what exactly is the problem, and how do we work our way from there with that problem? Whatever that problem may be. It could be something very simple. It could be something very complicated that requires a lot of individuals to interact on.
Okay. I think that's pretty straightforward. I think it gets challenging, certainly within a larger organization, when different teams or people align those priorities differently,
right,
or they don't necessarily overlap in the right way.
Right.
So how do you think is the best way to go about resolving that?
Well, there should always be a group of individuals that are put together that would be considered the sort of the core competency of the development team. Engineers, designers, marketing, could be operations. It just depends on whatever the thing is that you're trying to make. And kind of come into a consensus of, what do we think is the most important thing that we're trying to do in the design? It could be cost could be the most important thing. Depending on the product, could be weight. It could be a particular type of material. Anything. And so they're really just kind of prioritizing and then understanding with the team and having everyone agree and head nodding on, yeah, we agree. We're going to go, if the product is intended to be a lightweight product, we're going to target a specific weight, 1 kilogram or whatever the weight is, and that's what we're going to design for. And when you do that, it means you then make decisions based on that. So instead of using, a heavy material, you might mold it out of magnesium. Like for a notebook, for example, if we're going for super lightweight, we might use all mag, maybe some carbon fiber. We wouldn't do it in plastic or aluminum. It's really just once you do that and you establish that as the priority, then as you start designing the product, you have to make decisions based on that,
sure,
depending on the material, right? Because you design differently for aluminum than you would for plastic or magnesium, right?
So it seems like a lot of potential problems that could arise with people and teams having different priorities can be solved beforehand, I think, with having the right processes in place and development or agreement upon a development path in terms of who owns what or how decisions get made, let's say.
Right. Typically the teams that I've been working with, marketing is kind of leading and trying to establish what that priority is and establishing what their preferences are in terms of this is the most important thing to me. It might be a list of 5 or maybe 10 things. And then everyone else may come together and we'll have a discussion about it. And sometimes, there's a lot of tension in the process, and that's good to really challenge some of these assumptions. Maybe lightweight isn't the most important thing. Maybe it should be second or third. Maybe some other thing might be most important. It could be, do you sacrifice weight for strength? Do you sacrifice weight for costs? Are you, mm-hmm. are you spending an exorbitant amount of money in order to achieve this super yeah. lightweight thing that you're doing? So it could be how the product ships. If you're making furniture, for example, and you know it's got to ship, IKEA is a great example of where, you know, the priority is like, well, it's got to be, it's beautiful, but it's got to be flat packed mm-hmm. and be able to be taken home and assembled. It's not a pre-assembled thing because the priority is making sure they can ship as many as they can on a pallet.
Their business model.
Right. So it's just those kinds of things kind of make you, it forces you to have to make decisions, and it puts constraints into the process so that you're able to kind of really focus on mm-hmm. what you're trying to do as a designer or as a group of individuals trying to solve the problem.
It seems like that process or the framework that's set up to set up that process for a company is, in my mind, what in the end defines what they produce in the end, I think. Because out of that process, it will show what are the priorities about, what is the company about. So I think that's pretty interesting. An interesting dynamic to see how a company sets up its decision-making process for those kinds of things, for its priorities.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things we could be doing. I mean, it could be we might have a priority within a particular design where we have to leverage other components from other products, and so that becomes a priority. And so we try to apply it in a way that it's not obvious to the user. So we shouldn't compromise the experience based on some other priority.
Sure.
That might be driving decisions that the business might be making.
So in an organization like Dell, where you're working with engineers, designers, marketing, how do you manage to have the user experience or the end goal of the design always present and not getting tied into the little details that is your priority? So how do you always remind yourself of the end user or the end goal or the experience that you're trying to deliver at the end?
So how do we maintain the design elements within the process?
Right.
Well,
because you could get tied up into like the little things that are your priority at the time, and you might forget or you might overlook what the overall experience at the end.
Right. Well, is. So I mean that's a good question. Will, you know, we're always challenged with cross or competing priorities from various teams. So we'll, you know, we'll go through the process and maybe look at things, study it. And if we think it's not exactly right for the end user, then we'll call it out and say, hey, we're not aligned. We don't want to do this. We think it's a bad choice. It doesn't look right. If it looks like a mistake, that's something we wouldn't want to do. I think most design organizations would work that way if they have those types of constraints. You know, the designers, it's always up for the designer really kind of having the conversation with their marketing team and talking about, you know, what ultimately is the experience that we're trying to develop and what problem are we solving? Are we really solving a problem for the customer or are we solving a problem for us? Because sometimes, you know, I think we talked a little bit about this, Dan. Sometimes adding complexity into the process is not a bad thing if it means the end result to the customer is good.
Yeah, it just seems like, especially in a big company like that, a lot of things have to come together because you know the company has its own goals within, you know, like it has to keep costs or it has to, you know, do this certain amount of work with certain amount of time, and that might seem to be like a lot of things to manage, basically, that have to come together for an experience to come about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how to explain it in another way. I know there's a lot of complexity in large organizations that make things, make services. So it's really up to the designer, I think, to help manage that and not let things get carried away. Because we're always challenged by our executives to, hey, are you really thinking about the end user? Is this really good for the for the customer? Is it really solving their problem, or is it solving a problem for us?
Well, and I think it's why it's important to make sure as a design organization that you have the appropriate resources to handle all those things, whether it be internal manpower or budgets to use external resources or any of those kinds of things. Because you're right, there is, especially in a big company, there's lots of moving parts, and to make sure that you're doing what you need to be doing adequately and leading in many ways, it's important to do that.
Yeah, I think as a design, when you're in a design organization, one of the unique things that you have over everyone else is that you're really involved in the total creation of everything that that company might make. So if it's medical equipment and you're designing one specific device with that particular business unit, they're only seeing what they make. They make ultrasound machines. That's all they're looking at. But you're in a group that's working on everything, on X-ray, CT, mm-hmm. PET CT, defibrillators, whatever it is. You have a very unique view, and so you have to come back to that group of individuals that you're working with, and kind of give them the context of where your position is coming from and why it's important. Because you want these things to work well together as well as a standalone product.
You can help provide a little bit of a big picture outlook
right
to them when they're hyper focused on a single thing.
Right.
Which actually leads us to the fourth item in these laws of design. The fourth being, we are all leaders in the organization.
Right. So the purpose of me kind of writing this, well, really for me writing all of this, is just to help clarify my own mind in what I believe to be important for me and for my team to kind of go about how we do our work. And the one where we're all leaders, I think sometimes people, even new designers, often sit and wait for someone to tell them to do something. And it's really, you know, I report to individuals, and I have people that report to me, and it's up to me. If I'm not clear about what my boss wants or what my boss's boss wants, I have to go and ask questions. If I'm not clear on what someone is asking for in, say, marketing, I have to go and ask them the questions and really get it clarified. If it means talking to them once a week or every other week, of having a regular conversation so that we can be aligned with what we're talking about, and then for me to really understand what they want, so then I can then go convey it to the rest of my team. And then as an individual contributor, as a sole designer, if you're not sure, you have to go and ask the questions. You have to ask your peers. You have to go and ask, when I say your peers, not just your design peers, but you need to go and ask the peers that you're working with, EE, mechanical. If you're not clear on something, you have to go ask the questions and really try to understand what are they trying to say, so that if you're going back and you're trying to explain something to your boss, you have a good grasp of what the problem is.
Sure. I think that's really important, is to ask questions. I think in retrospect, you know, when I was a younger designer, again, you don't know what you don't know. I think it would be helpful to, when working with other teams, because, again, like I said, you don't know what you don't know, is basically to ask them and learn about what they do and how they do it. And in the process of doing that, I think you will help. It will help clarify the questions that you should ask. And in that way, help align and shape the vision, as you had mentioned, where you have to be very clear on what your manager or the manager's manager, what the goals and the things you're trying to achieve are. And in the same way, you can also spread the message
right
to folks that work for you.
Right. It's all about understanding what the why is.
Yeah.
For that group, it could be the why for that particular product, for that program, for the family of products. So all of those things are important, and it really comes about with communication. And overly communicating sometimes is not a bad thing. So
sure,
having more conversations to understand holistically what people are trying to do will be more helpful in the end. Because what you don't want to do is get to a point where you're having a review and somebody's asking you questions and your answer is nobody told me. That's a really bad answer.
Right.
It's often an answer that like your kids might give you. Because when you're sort of fussing at them about something and then they just say, well, nobody told me. Well, you know, maybe sometimes you might want to just ask questions.
Sure.
Right. So
if you were to give some advice on this particular item about being a leader or leading to, you know, a new designer or somebody new to the field, is that what you'd give them? Ask questions, or is there additional insight?
Yes, being curious, asking questions is important. It's up to you to lead yourself and to lead your peers, and the only way to do that is to engage, ask questions, prioritize what your tasks are. Keep your message simple. You know, all of the laws of design, right? Depend on yourself, depend on your team. I think, you know, unless something goes wrong, you should assume that your teammates are credible, right? And depend on them based on what you know about them and what information is available to you about those particular individuals. Some people are super, super smart. Some may not be as engaged as others. So, you know, we all have to kind of take it upon ourselves, and sitting around and kind of waiting for direction isn't always the best thing. I know in the past I've kind of done that, and, you know, I've had that behavior where I'm kind of just waiting. And I think that there's always a lot of missed opportunities when that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have done something else. You could have had more iterations. You could have done more studies, or you could have gone and dug a little bit deeper in the details of what it is that you're doing. So those are kind of I would consider that sort of my philosophy of kind of working as a designer. I don't know if it's the best. I'm sure other people have other opinions about it, but it's kind of, I don't know.
All right.
That's what I think. Aaron?
So since you are, since you did write about all of these from your experience, do you have any anecdotes to where, you know, you might have been in a spot or someone that worked for you or with you was in a spot where they weren't the leader, they didn't take the role of the leader, they didn't ask questions, and it ended up in a disaster?
Or conversely, you could say where you saw somebody shine and show some leadership qualities and then how that translated into a success.
I can say a few things. I won't get into specific people, but I think one thing I've noticed with a couple of designers that I work with, where English isn't the first language. What I find interesting with some of those designers is they're able to maintain a simple message when they're telling a story, because English is hard for them. And so when they're putting together decks to try to message what they've designed and kind of what the design is, or maybe it's about a design language, they do a really good job at telling that story. And I think having English not as a first language, they're having to translate things in their head from their native tongue into English. And so for me, I kind of see that simplicity as like a really good thing. It kind of helps. It helps solidify the message, what they're trying to say. So that, I think that's a really good thing. I think, you know, as individual leaders, you know, I recall, you know, one particular designer where he was working on something and he wasn't getting a lot of input back from the mechanical engineering team. So he just kind of kicked people out of the way and just started running Pro E on his own and putting all the features in that the engineers were supposed to do. And then I think a couple of days later, that particular engineering manager kind of shamed the engineer and said, you're letting the ID guy do all the mechanical engineering. Maybe you need to step it up a little bit. So it's kind of just taking that ownership of just saying, well, if he's not going to do it, I'm going to go and do it. I'm going to figure it out because I know it needs to be done. So that was pretty cool. We I know Dan. Dan knows that particular person. It's just, you know, it's just kind of neat to watch the guy just get angry about it and then just start getting after it and start pumping the CAD himself and doing the engineering details the way they needed to be done. So that's kind of, you know, someone who I think kind of would take ownership of certain situations.
All right. Well, I think it's been good advice for people and insight into your experience in the design field at large.
Yeah.
So thanks for taking the time to talk to us about it.
Well, thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me about it. I guess that's it. See how it goes.
I mean, let me see.
You want to say more? What do you think about it, Aaron? As a young designer, as somebody who is 2 years into, are you two or more? How many years are you into the profession?
Just over two.
So just over 2 years. You're pretty young. You're in your 20s. You've been exposed to. You worked for Dan. Did you work for anybody else prior to Dan?
No. I mean, not as far as like physical actual ID. I did, you know, have like display design for Anthropology and then worked for another startup. But basically, I mean, at the startup, I was the only guy. It was just entrepreneurs. I was the only ID guy.
Okay.
And they didn't know anything about design. So anything I said or did, or it was okay with them. I did work with some engineers that they had. But it was a lot more simple stuff.
Yeah, Aaron's. I think he's done very well, and he and I have talked about this during the very informal review that we have every year.
Yeah,
but he's done very well. He has a super hard work ethic, easy to get along with, many great qualities. One of the things I think that, and he'll eventually get this, and he's probably had a little insight into it, is just in working with companies that are a lot bigger and more complex, the different dynamics that you can, even as a outside consulting firm, you can still get some glimpses into those dynamics and I'll even go so far as to say flaws in how the company operates and some of the headbutting and the fighting that happens, which typically is not productive. I think sometimes it can be, but lots of times people just get frustrated. So I think, I don't know, Aaron, you probably have seen a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Not from inside you and I working together, but just the frustrations that we can sometimes see seeping out of the cracks in customers that we work for.
Yeah, we've gotten those emails where it's like you said, the person that tagged, I think this was a different conversation we had earlier, but you said, like, you know, someone that tags everyone instead of just telling your direct superior something, where they just go in and
reply all.
Yeah, reply all.
And vent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's not a good thing.
To me, it's interesting what you said about the, you know, like designers that have their first language is not English, and they are able to simplify. I feel like for me, sometimes it's a little bit different because I know English, but it was my first language. And in translating, sometimes it's hard for me to translate it directly into English. I don't know. It sometimes can seem dull or out of place just because I'm having to translate from Spanish to English.
Right.
And it's a little bit, it can get a little bit convoluted. At least in my head. Yeah, or comical. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that happens. And it's happened to some, you know, some of these guys, you know, that I've worked with. So you kind of review things. You're like, well, maybe we don't want to say that, but I get what you're trying to say. And then it's easy to kind of like fix it and maintain that sort of the rhythm that they've established in terms of the simplicity of what they're trying to explain.
Yeah, but other than that, as a young designer, when I see, you know, like your four laws of design or your principles, more than having an opinion, I try to understand them and see, you know, how I can learn from it rather than trying to challenge it right away, because, you know, I never know. I'm just trying to learn, since you have experience, so I'm just trying to take some from that.
Okay.
From that experience.
That's fair. All right. Well, I think that concludes the second half of our four laws of design discussion.
Yeah.
We hope that if anyone is interested and wants to have more dialogue or has some questions or maybe some other opinions, please.
Or have their own four laws.
Yeah. Give them to us. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.